This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. I'm H.F. Mason. I'm a General Surgeon and Chief Quality Officer for the Baptist System.
And I'm Bill Cloud. I'm Assistant Chief Medical Officer for Baptist.
Well, folks, we have a great guest today. We have Steve Nickel, and we're going to be talking to Steve about something he's been working on that he calls Meeting Reduction Initiative. Meeting Reduction Initiative. But before we jump right into that conversation, Steve, if you would tell our audience a little bit about yourself and about your background.
Okay, yeah, thanks, guys. So my background. So most of my working life, I spent working for an organization called News Corporation, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with. I was an operations manager there, or I eventually became an operations manager there in our print division. So really fast moving consumer goods. Yeah, the Sunday Times doesn't work on a Monday. It only is any good on a Sunday. It's chip paper by Monday. So, yeah, I was really lucky to work there, work my way up through the business. And one of the things, you know, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, that newspapers aren't that popular anymore. So we had to kind of reinvent ourselves when these clever guys out in California come up with iPhones and iPads. And we really got into business excellence then about how we could survive and be the last man standing in that world, if you like. One of the things, we were very successful at that. We, after a while, we weren't always successful at it, but we became successful, so much so that we became the first business in the UK to win a Shingo Prize, which we were very proud of, and still the only one to win a Shingo Prize. Many have got recognition, but not prizes in the UK. I set myself a target, I guess, to leave there and go off and see if I could help other businesses become successful. So I set up the Lean Orange. We work with organizations all over the world. We've been going about 8 years now, and it's really about building excellence into organizations. Three of the businesses that we've worked with have gone on to win their own Shingo Prizes, which is really cool as well. So it's really nice that we're doing something right. And the subject we're going to talk about today is usually one of the areas that we start on to try and free up space for people to start working on other things.
Well, Steve, once again, on behalf of Baptist, welcome to the podcast. Really fascinated about what we're going to talk about today. But before we start, I got to know a little bit about the name, the Lean Orange. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Okay. So when I was 50, I took a master's degree. And I took a master's degree in business excellence. So really, or operational excellence, as the master's degree was titled. But I always think about it as the entire business. And part of my challenge there, having been part of a business that was, as I said, lucky enough to get a Shingo Prize, was, okay, so this is how you get one, but how do you keep it? How do you keep excellent, and how do you keep progressing yourself and moving forward? Because from my experience as an examiner, I haven't been back to any businesses twice to verify whether they're still excellent or not. So it was really that in itself, I guess, was that the word lean really had a lot of connotations about doing less or doing more with the same. And it kind of had a bit of bad press for a while, certainly in the UK anyway. So I really wanted to challenge the theory about how do you get sustainable at this? So the Lean Orange came out of that research, in the fact that let's reinvent lean for the next generation, if you like, so that it's seen as business improvement and business excellence rather than, you know, less with more. And the orange really came from a couple of things. One, orange is a really cool colour. I love it. It's the colour of my favourite football team here in England, called Luton Town. They play in orange. But also it's a very vibrant colour. As you probably know from a medical background, lots of tablets that make you feel good are orange. So they make you put you on a bit of an upper. And I wanted to sort of challenge this theory that people come up with is like squeezing the lemon. You know, you squeeze the lemon until you get all the pips out of it, as quite around lean can be a theory for some people. So I started thinking and bashing it around and thinking, well, I can't really call myself the lean lemon, because that kind of implies that I'm a lemon. And so it kind of morphed into the orange. Now, let's take an orange, explore it. What else can you do with an orange rather than make orange juice out of it? You can do a lot of things.
Sure.
So look at your business as that orange and be curious and creative with it.
Well, thank you for that. And like I said, I was really excited about the topic when I found out what it was. And, you know, we're going to talk about your meeting reduction initiative. Yep. Now, you know, meeting reduction, that, you know, That implies that we have too many meetings if you're trying to reduce something. So tell us a little bit about the initiative and how you came up with that.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, I guess one of the things I always say to leaders when I start working with leadership teams, coaching them, is would you like some more meetings in your calendar? And I'm sure not many people would like more meetings in their calendar. And when they get interviewed for their jobs or when they get promoted into new jobs, they don't get told that they're going to have to go to this 101 meetings a day and spend most of your time stuck in a meeting. And sometimes you'll be sitting in that meeting wondering, what am I doing here? Why am I here? And I know from my own experience, I was often invited to meetings because if I was coming, someone else had come. So you get into this circle of meetings being a burden. And then when do you do your work? You do your work in the evenings, or you do your work in weekends, or you stay back late to do your work. So really trying to get improvement into the business and find time and protect time for continuous improvement is really important. So by relieving some of the burden of unnecessary meetings was always seemed like a good place to start. If you could free up a couple of hours for everybody every week and reinvest that in continuous improvement, you know, you can get those marginal gains, those 1% improvements that make a difference. And then you build some momentum and it carries on. So I guess it's always a good place to start. Find some time. Continuous improvement shouldn't be seen as an add-on. It should be your work. Improvement is your work. So how do you make it your work? You get people out of boring meetings that they shouldn't be sat in. It's normally a really good sign of a bad culture. If that answers your question.
Yes, Steve. So talk about how I think everybody's going to be really excited to have fewer meetings, and you get a sense of relief there. How do you get them to use that extra time to devote to operational excellence or improvement?
Yeah, good question, Bill. Well, again, it's not always just about doing less meetings as well. It's about doing the right meetings. So many businesses have meetings, but they don't have proper agendas. They don't have proper inputs. They have a meeting to go to the meeting and a meeting after the meeting to discuss the next meeting's outputs. And so it goes on. So really, it's important, Bill, to free up time for people to work on the important things in business. I know from my time and working as part of a leadership team, we were always being told to be efficient. Be efficient at what you do. But actually, before you become efficient, you need to be effective. So you need to know you're working on the right things, because you could be spending a lot of time being really efficient at doing the wrong things. And I think it was Russell Ackoff, if my memory serves me right, that told us that there's nothing worse than doing the wrong things right. So I guess it's getting out of that meeting spin and then using that time to invest. And one of the things I always say to leadership teams, particularly, Bill, is if you free this time up, don't put it into another meeting. That's the golden rule. The time is to invest and protect. Invest it in improvement and protect it in your diary. So then that comes into standard work. So by really freeing up the meeting time, we can then start to create really effective, and I use the word effective, standard work for our leaders to concentrate on working on the business and not in it, because meetings are normally about being stuck in the business firefighting than working on the business lighting fires, you know, having a burning ambition rather than a burning platform. I don't know if that answers, but
yeah, you know, Steve, we talk a lot about standard work and about this management system. Talk about your view of standard work. When you talk about standard work, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, I guess it's really it's those effective things, those important things that need doing. We don't need to diaritize every hour of our day so that we can go to someone and say, can you tick this spreadsheet? I've completed all these tasks. I mean, that's not standard work. That's just, you know, following a schedule and ticking off that you've completed it like a tick list. So it's really about trying to understand for the leaders, managers and team members, associates, what is the work that we must get done today? And if we don't get it done, will someone else make sure we get it done? So leader standard work is really important to say, these are the key things that we need to work on today in this business to know that we've won and that we've won together as a team. And then likewise for managers, likewise for team members. I mean, most of our team members' day will be standardized. You know, we need to also make sure that our leaders have free time to go out and lead and coach and teach and, you know, build and grow the people in the business. Because if we grow the people, then they will grow the business. So for me, standard work is about making sure that the things that we've promised to do are done. We've promised to do these things. Let's fulfill on our promise. And then that gives us time to be creative and do all the other great things that, you know, our people need us to do. And if we keep our people happy, they keep our customers happy and keep themselves happy as well. Happy people are productive people. So I've always found.
Steve, I want your input on how you coach the folks that you coach on two different sides. Number one, you know, it seems like right now that the answer to everything is, well, we need to schedule a meeting. We need to get together a meeting. So how do you coach your people about, you know, when it's appropriate to schedule a meeting, when it may not be appropriate? And on the other end is that when we schedule meetings, we tend to invite everybody and their mother. And, you know, sometimes you get that meeting invite and, you know, there's a little guilt associated with declining. So how should, when you're getting all these invites, how should you respond when you really think, okay, is this something that I need to truly attend?
Yeah, no, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? Because we don't want to miss out as well. So we think, oh, we better go to the meeting because there might be something there this time that's interesting. Maybe not. So I guess it's really about making sure that, you know, we're not saying we shouldn't have meetings. What we're saying is we should have the right meetings at the right time with the right people, with the right duration. So why are all meetings half an hour or an hour in people's schedules? Because that's what Microsoft and Google give you in your calendar. So you just go, oh, it's a half hour and an hour. So why can't we be creative and go, actually, this subject needs 40 minutes to talk about, or this subject needs 10 minutes to talk about. Do we need to actually sit down and talk about this? No, we could have a huddle around a whiteboard, or we could do this, we could do that. So again, it's about purpose. One of the things I make sure that, you know, when I'm coaching this with leads, and by the way, it's really hard to get leaders out of meetings because they're like, they're safety blankets. I can't stop. I'm really busy. I'm on my way to a meeting. See me later. You know, and so they dodge a lot of really good work by just running around the building, going to meetings. So I guess it's making sure that, you know, as a structure. So the thing that we do is we map out the meetings. So we have a process where we get people to map out the meetings. Right. Let's put a big piece of paper up on the wall and let's go. What are the daily meetings that happen in this business? What are the weekly meetings that happen in this business? The bi-weekly, the monthly, the bi-monthly, quarterly, whatever, you know, we have. What are all those meetings up to the 6 monthly and the yearly meetings, which might be personal reviews with people or, you know, development reviews? We map them all out. But what we do is we collect data and facts about each meeting. So who owns this meeting? What's the purpose of this meeting? You know, what's the duration of it? What are the outputs for this meeting? So we collect a whole bunch of data, just like you might do if you were doing a value stream map or something like that. And then we analyze it and we go, okay, do you realize? So recently I did this exercise in a business with 100 people in it. This business only has 100 people. So maybe 70, 80 of them are attending meetings. Not all of them, because some of them are, you know, they're lucky enough to be the ones that don't have to go to meetings. They were spending 12,000 hours a year in meetings. Now, if you put a standard cost to a meeting, you can do this in lots of ways, but the way I find most effective is to get the accountant to tell us how much it costs to keep the lights on, put the phones in, put the gas and the electric on, and et cetera, et cetera. What's the cost of the building here? And then divide it by the amount of people. You normally come out with a cost somewhere around about $60, £60, you know, in roughly. It's never much different to that per hour, per person. So this business was spending £1.2 million a year keeping 75, 80 people in meetings. Now, if you were going to buy a piece of kit for that amount of money or a piece of equipment, your return on investment might be, you know, £3.5 million or $3.5 million, something like that. So it really focuses your mind on, actually, are we getting a return on investment for these meetings, or are they just a talking shop where we can have some tea and biscuits and no actual meaningful things come out at the end of it? So I think that's a really powerful moment for leadership teams to go, wow, we are spending a lot of time. This business I just mentioned, it was the equivalent of locking 8 people in a room every day for the rest of the year doing nothing. So they were screaming about headcount, but they were locking people in rooms in meetings that weren't really giving any value. So let's free those people. Let's make sure that the meetings all have inputs, processes and outputs. And if they don't, then they're not meeting and they can't go on the agenda. Tell us why we need to have this meeting. And the last thing that we make sure we do with these meetings is we link them to our huddles. So the huddles are the spine of the meeting structure. And that those huddles have a clear agenda to them as well. So, you know, we follow something, you know, people do it in various ways, but I really favor PSQDC. So people, safety, quality, delivery, cost. We talk about those things. And if one of the meetings isn't related to one of those, then why are we having it? If it isn't related to a customer, why are we having the meeting?
Now, that's a great point.
Steve, so, we talk a lot about the meeting before the meeting. And you've described, you know, how you map out a meeting. What we don't do very much of is debrief after meetings. Is that something that you do on a regular basis? And what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of that IPO, so that input, process, output for every meeting, you know, you have to have a structure in there that, you know, there's a very short period of time at the beginning that's a recap. And there's more creative ways of doing that. Sometimes you can make sure you send that recap out to people so they come prepared, so you hit the ground running. How many times do people leave meetings and walk out the door and go, and what did we say we were going to do? I can't remember now, you know. So we don't actually have outputs for the meeting. So it's really important to have outputs for the meeting. With the tiered meeting structure I explained to you there, the huddles, lessons learned are really important. So what have we learned? What went well this week? What didn't go so well this week? What could we do differently next week? So it's really important, Bill, to build that mechanism into your meetings of lessons learned. You know, how do we become a learning organization? I think it was Peter Senge that wrote The Fifth Dimension and talked about being a learning organization. For me, that's something that isn't about training. It's about learning, sharing knowledge, wisdom, insights, you know. So that has to come from meetings as well, because one of my experiences that got me onto this was actually sometimes as doing my work as a Shingo examiner, and sometimes going into businesses and either officially in that capacity or just going in doing benchmarkings. And I always like to start by sitting in the leadership meetings, because they tell you so much about the business. If the meetings are a bit cranky and a bit dysfunctional, then there's a good chance the rest of the business is going to be a bit cranky and dysfunctional. So meeting discipline is really important, really important. And lessons learned out of meetings is key. You know, those coaching questions at the end, what went well, guys? And giving roles and responsibilities as well, Bill. That's something we build into this as we go forward. We're not just trying to reduce the meetings, we're trying to then build effective meetings afterwards. So what would a terms of reference for a meeting look like? What would that IPO look like? What are the roles and responsibilities that we need in this meeting? You know, who's going to be the coach? Who's going to be an observer and give us feedback on whether this was an effective meeting or not? Or was it just another talking shop?
See, I know you felt this. We certainly have at Baptist. We just came out of the pandemic, and that had a couple of effects. One was a lot more people work remotely, and we have a lot more virtual meetings. How do you decide when you need a physical meeting?
Always a physical meeting first, and a virtual meeting is a second choice. I mean, I think that one of the lessons, you know, certainly learned out of COVID, well, there's lots of lessons, I guess, but some of them haven't really stuck. But I think the fact that, you know, this obsession with virtual meetings became quite a problem for a lot of businesses. I find it with a lot of my customers, and they're kind of struggling. And I say, just get people back in the meetings. And if you can't do that, then make the virtual meetings hybrid if you can. You know, if there's people in a business, I was in a business not so long ago, and they were observing the meetings, and it was a virtual meeting, and there was 10 people on the meeting, and someone said, oh, Sally's not on the meeting. They went, Sally's in the office today. And then someone on the meeting shouted across the office, Sally, you need to get on the meeting. And then Sally logged onto the meeting, and it was like, what's that about? Why? That's cranky. So one of the things that I try to get people to do is, if you're having meetings, can you have the meeting physically And then people dial into it virtually, where there's some great setups with cameras you can put in now and good sound systems. Even if it's, you know, a tiered medium with a structured, pillared sort of approach, then dial people in as a last resort. But communications is not about a one-way broadcast. It's about conversation. And you can't get conversation to flow as well when people aren't physically together. I'm really believe that. I have to say quite often as a coach, look, guys, we're not on line here. You're not on mute. There isn't a mute button. So just be present in the room and be involved in the conversation. Conversation's the key word, I think. Getting conversation going. Two-way conversation. I don't know if that answers it, but I find virtual is a challenge. It was very interesting. A little while back, I was in the States and I was in California, and I took one of my customers from San Diego up to an aerospace site just outside of LA, a place called Riverside. And there's a fantastic lady there that I met, Ange, and she had been the CI lady in this business for 40 years. It was incredible. The first benchmark they had was done by a guy called John Shook, and he looked like a teenager doing this. They had a picture of him. And I was laughing. I was going, blimey, I've read his books and this and the other. And I said to Ange, we did a Q&A with this leadership team afterwards. I said to her, give us one bit of advice, Ange. What would you not have done that you've done? And she said, turn tiered meetings virtually and digital.
Mm.
She said, that would be my biggest learning. So I think there's an obsession with it sometimes that we need to get back to basics with.
I agree. I want to talk a little bit about agendas. And, you know, we here at Baptist, we have our Baptist management system. We have 11 guiding principles. And the first principle that we have is respect and, you know, respect for everyone. And of course, we want to respect everybody's time. And in that context, should every meeting, every's a big, you know, but should most meetings have a set agenda? And I'm thinking about when I set a meeting, if I'm not able to write out an agenda for that meeting, maybe the meeting shouldn't exist in the first place.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree with you there. So one of the things that our aim from doing these MRIs with people really is to free up time to then move into the next phase of sort of a business excellence playbook and free up time for people to work on improving the business, but also to build a business meeting system. Now, all of the meetings that find themselves in the business meeting system are formal meetings, and they will have an IPO. They'll have a term of reference. If they don't, they're not a meeting. Then it's a conversation with somebody. And if you can't put an agenda together, you can't link it to your principles, because that's really important. Which one of our principles is this meeting going to drive? Which one of our metrics is this meeting connected to? Which one of our customer expectations are we fulfilling with this meeting? Whether they're internal or external customers, but how are we linking it to those key fundamentals? You know, if it can't meet those things, then it's a conversation, and it's something that we find another forum to have it in. And it might be, you know, an informal chat with someone at the coffee machine, or it might be a, let's just sit down here and discuss this topic here. It's not everything has to be formal. As we know from systems thinking, we've got formal systems and informal systems, and not every meeting is a formal system. Sometimes it's an informal system. So then it's a conversation. So I think for the formal ones that are in this business meeting system, they should absolutely have an agenda, or we wouldn't put them on them on the system as part of our business meeting system. Does that?
Got it. Yeah, no, that helps. It sure does. Sure does. And I was wondering, you know, can you give us some feedback on some of the companies that you've worked with? You know, we've been able to reduce their meetings by this percent and giving folks this much time back each week.
Yeah, so absolutely. And just to add something to the other point as well about the agendas, it acts as a governance process as well to say, actually, you know, this can't be a meeting because it doesn't meet our governance of what a meeting actually looks and feels like. So that's something else just to add on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That point. Yeah. So as I said there's a business that we've been working with recently, and you know, we normally sort of say to people we can save 20%, at least 20%, and that 20% normally ends up as 40% of people's time. It's incredible, because a while back I was doing this with another leadership team, And once we'd identified, we'd done all the mapping, we created a lovely spreadsheet with everything on the spreadsheet, all the meetings, who owned them all. And then we sat down with each leader and said, right, is this the right title for this meeting? Is the subject matter correct? Is the agenda correct? Is the attendee list correct? And it was incredible that a lot of the leaders went, oh, actually, I don't do that meeting anymore. Oh, okay. So should we take it out of people's calendars? Yeah, cleanse it. Take it out of people's calendars. Because how many times do people turn up for a meeting and go, oh, it's not on this week? Now I've just wasted 5-10 minutes getting to a meeting and I stopped doing what I was doing to go to the meeting. So it's never 5 minutes. It's always half an hour lost, whatever it is. So it's really important to cleanse the meetings as well. And as I'm sort of alluding to, in most businesses, it's between 20 and 40% because they're habits. A lot of meetings become habits, bad habits as well. And you sit in that meeting and nothing comes out of it. That should be an alarm bell going off in your head saying, this meeting isn't adding any value. It's a non-value-adding meeting. Yes, there's some non-value-adding meetings in the business that are essential that we have. You know, business review meetings and governance quality meetings. Yeah, they're all essential. The customer's not paying for them. But actually, if we was to look at some of the meetings and go, would our customer be happy that we're sitting in here having this meeting? Would they see that it's a good use of our time? Because the customer doesn't pay for us to have meetings. We can't put it on our bill, can we? We can't put it on our cost of goods to our customers.
I have, really, really good.
Can Steve, I ask I got one other question. And, you know, I know a lot, and I just want to get your thoughts. A lot of organizations, they will have meeting blackout periods during the week. They may say, okay, Tuesday morning from 7 until 1 or 7 until noon, you can't have any meetings. That you know, I would like your thoughts on that before we wrap up.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm laughing. Because it's interesting. I've had that. Yeah, but we used to do a no email Friday or a no meeting Wednesday afternoon. I went, how did the business function with that then? How did that happen? Because you can't stop your business. The business is still running. So you can't just say, we're not going to have any meetings on a Friday or we're not going to have any emails on a Wednesday afternoon. So you have to, that's why this meeting reduction initiative is so important. Let's make sure the meetings we've got are effective, put them into our schedule, and then we're going to enjoy them as well. Because we know they're productive meetings and they're effective meetings. The one thing I try to get people to consider as well is, though, is if you've got tiered meetings in the morning, like huddles, team huddles, protect them. So if you're going to have a business meeting system, maybe start it at 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. This is when we'd have all our formal meetings in this period of time to give people time in the morning to get their essential work done, attend their team huddles, and then in the afternoon, be able to close down their day and make sure that they've, you know, left on time, because that's important, that they've left on time to go home to their families and not rushed out of a meeting and left a pile of stuff that's not been resolved. So I think having a window when the meetings are during the day works well, but having a day when you don't have any meetings, I'm not quite sure how that business would run, because we need to have meetings, don't we? But we need to have the right meetings.
Absolutely.
You know, just to kind of bring us to an end, Steve, you know, the other thing I've seen, I'm sure you have too, in the name of continuous improvement, is I'm thinking of a physician leader at our facility that have these meetings on the progression of care of a patient. And going back to, I know you've quoted Russell Acuff and Peter C., you know, systems, right? In those meetings, you have to have a lot of different disciplines come into a meeting. What he has done that's been so impressive to me is he's continued to reduce it. The very first time, Dr. Cloud, you probably remember this, we had a multidisciplinary meeting several years ago. I think the meeting was like 2.5 hours. That same exact meeting today is 15 minutes. Now, fantastic. It is needed. It's needed for the patient's sake. But what used to be 2.5 hours is very productive 15 minutes. And so I find that very fascinating that, yes, you can try to go from an hour to 30 minutes or 15 minutes. You can try to eliminate. But then there's also this idea of trying to continue to shrink that thing. And I'm sure you've probably experienced that.
Absolutely. You have to keep challenging. This isn't a one-off MRI. It's a constant continuous improvement process that you said, right, we're going to review this meeting in 3 months and see if it's still effective. Actually, we've trimmed it down too much. We might need to add some time back into it. Yeah, this isn't just about taking off. This is about making sure the meetings are effective. So we might say, well, we're only having half hour. We're not giving this subject the respect that it needs. You talked about respect. We're not giving it the respect it needs. So we need to give a bit more time to it. Or we need to talk about it in a separate forum, maybe, because it's a subject that needs, you know, a little bit more focus or harnessing our focus on. So it's not just about chopping meetings. It's about having the right meetings at the right time with the right people so that we get the right outcomes from them. And then that we free people up from this burden so they can go on off and do what we paid them to do in the first place, what they came here to do, which is great work and be curious and creative people. So that's why it's so important that, you know, you get this structure correct, because it becomes a burden to people. I've never had, actually, the first question I asked there to you guys was, do you want more meetings? I've never had anyone say yes to me yet, and I've been asking the question for I don't know how many donkey's years now. No one's ever said yes. So, you know, I'm always hopeful, but I think that person might need shooting if they said yes.
That's right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting the Dots podcast, and on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, we just want to thank you so much for all the great work you're doing, and hopefully you'll maybe consider coming back on in the future.
I'd love it. It's been great fun. Lots to talk about.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys. Take care.
Thank you.